This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we are live. Live here on Pet Life Radio and on Instagram. And hello, hello. So, for those of you who don't remember, I've been gone for a lot. I mean, January is really tough because I have a lot of conferences. Plus, I threw in two little personal things, a little vacation with the fam to Puerto Vallarta. That was great. And then I did something really cool with a bunch of my friends. And that is we went to Louisville, Kentucky for what's called the Bourbon Trail. And actually, it's very interesting stuff. You really learn the process, which is great. So, Katie Pooh, we have a dog with itchy skin. So itchy right now. So we'll get to that. Let's pop out right now. Unless there's somebody else. My sister is on. Hello, hello. So, itchy skin. There's so many different reasons for itchy skin. Now, if this were in the middle of summer, highest on my list, or one of the high things, would be either atopic dermatitis. That is an inhaled allergens, trees, pollens, grasses, weeds, you name it. There's so many things during spring and summer that can affect our bodies. And of course, fleas. So here, and depending on where you live, I mean, here it's pretty cold in LA. We don't have a huge flea problem during the winter, but we can still have them. And other allergens, here's the thing. If an allergy is seasonal, now you have to look for seasonal causes, such as fleas and pollens, we call atopic dermatitis. If it's year-round, then we have to think of something. Well, what is year-round? Food. Food is year-round. And though only the estimate, depending on who you talk to, 15, max 20% of allergies in dogs are food-related, it still does happen. So, I mean, it could be food. And usually with food allergies, one thing about dogs especially, depending on where the scratching is, will give you an idea. Now, obviously, the dog didn't read the book. They don't know exactly how they're supposed to react and respond, but it gives us an idea. And that is that if it is around the lower back, the rump, then you think of fleas. Then you're looking at the fleas, possibly. If it's in, now again, these are just broad estimated areas of giving us idea. It's not diagnostic. Belly, we call the ventral portion, the groin, the inguinal area, the thighs, inside the thighs. Then that's a key area for inhaled allergens, the pollens, the weeds, the reeds, the grasses, etc. Now, if it is ears and feet, they're going after their feet and sometimes rubbing their face along the wall or along the carpet, now you can think of food allergies. So if you have something that's so specific, that's where you want to start your looking. Now, as I said, though, if the allergy is year-round, then you have to look at something environmental that's year-round. Could be something in the house. The dogs are sensitive to certain things like wool and kapok and cotton and feathers and human epithelia. You could have a dog that's actually sensitive and allergic to you. It does happen. And so if something is there all the time, then you have to look for what they're exposed to all the time. And so that's going to be something internal, something around the house, or foods, of course. So these are all these things that, you know, we could see allergies. Now, my friend with having a dog that is continuously having allergy problems, good old Teddy too. So then you have to think of things that are around the house, or for some breeds, just like some people, they could be just hyper allergic to just living to everything. And then on top of the allergies, we often see what we call secondary pyoderma, which is a bacterial infection, or a secondary yeast infection. And those remain itchy. So if you only treat the allergy, but you're not going after the secondary problems like skin infection, bacterial, or fungal, then you're going to have a dog that's continuously itching. And those are the really tough cases. I mean, I've had dogs with fungal infections, very itchy. You smell it. It's that musty odor that these dogs get. And you can look it up. They have no fleas. Now it's become year-round, and it's all the time. I would think that they possibly have a fungal sensitivity, and those are really tough to beat. So that is another thing that's very important. So those you have to, and sometimes like when I treat the yeast infections, I'll start with like once a month. I mean, not once a month, for a month long. And I've had animals, and I talked to colleagues of mine that have been having their dogs being treated for allergies for fungal infections, secondary fungal infections, for 3 or 4 months. So they're really, really tough. So it's frustrating, very frustrating. But for itchy things, look for the basics. Make sure they're flea-free, making sure that they have no secondary infection. because that in of itself becomes very itchy. And then how do they respond to, that's also a good diagnostic, is how they respond to treatment. If you have a dog that has pollen atopic dermatitis, and you give them either Apoquil or Cytopoint or Zenrelia, and they amazingly get better, then that's probably what you're dealing with, something like that. If it's secondary infection or a fungal infection causing the itching, then those things aren't going to work because that's not allergy. So it's very important to really get to the base of it. Very, very challenging, but don't give up. Now, ultimately, either for your veterinarian, a blood test could be done. It's not the gold standard. It's like the silver standard. It's good enough in most cases to identify the allergens and identify what we can desensitize the dog through allergy shots that you give at home. It's not that difficult to do, and it can be very effective. It builds up their own immunity against that which they're allergic to. And or you can, we can send it to a dermatologist, and the veterinary dermatologist, interestingly, many of them do the same blood test. It used to be they would do the skin scratch testing, and that's the standard. When I was a kid and I had allergies, that's what they did. They did the skin scratch testing, and they put the little drops of the antigen into this little thing they've created in the skin, and they watched for a tremendous reaction. And those that had a reaction, whether it was the threes or fours, then, okay, you're allergic to that one, buddy, and we're going to desensitize. So that is, again, the goal. But I've sent dogs to dermatologists, and what they do is they can send me, I could do, draw blood, send it to the lab. So anyway, but do talk to your veterinarian. There are some ways that will at least control it. By the way, you can't really cure an allergy. You can control it. You can help it out. You can decrease the symptoms, but to eliminate it, that's a tough one. All right, let's see what we got here. I love all you guys that are here joining me. Eloise, happy belated birthday. I hope you got my text. I sent you a text. All right. Hope you might answer this on your podcast. Okay. Lexi, what am I answering? What? About the allergies? It's a long question. Well, give it to me. Let me have it. Todd, how you doing? Vicky, hope you had a good day. Okay. So it's a long question. I like long questions. I can handle a long question. You were in Vegas. I was in Vegas. You didn't even look me up. Or you were in Vegas for your birthday. I was there for Western Veterinary Conference, which, by the way, was great. Western is terrific. Well, first of all, AirVet, we're doing great. We're signing up a lot of veterinarians, which we need to do because we are getting so busy. We're getting so many calls. That's super important. Audi anus, chronically inflamed and swollen. Okay, so I'll read this out loud for those of you who aren't reading along with me. 4-year-old German short hair pointer who appears to have what looks like an Audi anus that is chronically inflamed and swollen. So obviously that's from pushing. And the question is why? So first of all, you want to make sure that the anal glands are completely empty. It may be wise to have it done professionally by your veterinarian. The way that the groomers express anal glands is okay, but it's not the best. What they do is, because they don't want to stick a glove on and go into the rectum. So what they do is they just squeeze anal gland against anal gland from the outside. In most cases, it's good enough. But when you have a dog with a chronic problem, you really need to do the better way. Most groomers won't do it. They say you got to take it to your vet. And that is put a glove on and you go just individually one anal gland at a time. And so it's your finger that's inside the butt on one and your thumb, and you're expressing, it's called expressing anal glands, and you get rid of that secretion on the inside. And that is the most effective way to do it. Now, hold on to every time she goes to the problem. Most of the time it's empty. Okay, good. Perfect. Right on cue. So now when that's eliminated, and it sounds like in this case with the German short hair pointer it is, then it's a lot of pushing. Now, I would also not only express the anal glands, I would do a good rectal exam. Is there something going on in there that is creating this push, this heavy-duty push? If the stools are already very, very firm, I would use something like get a good stool softener, add some fiber, get some psyllium husk powder or canned pumpkin or cooked oatmeal, something that could add some fiber. That might make it a little easier to eliminate. I'd also, if it hasn't been done, when the dog is between meals, I would have an x-ray taken. I've seen dog's colons on an x-ray full of feces, and they would make a racehorse jealous. It gets so big and so impacted. So what happens is they're pushing and pushing, and with that, they're sort of pushing the butt out. And what you could do, and I'd be happy to take a look at it, Lexi, you can actually send me a picture. Have someone, German short hair pointers have little tails anyway, but take a picture of the anus of when you think it's pouched out enough and send it to me. And I can throw my 2 cents in there as well. I'd be happy to take a look. But if it's just that, there are some solutions. If it's just anatomical, and everything else. The rectal exam is normal. The stool is normal. Not that much. Not pushing. He says, no problem going to the bathroom. Then maybe it's just him. So also, is he neuter? That's important. I want to know that too. The difference between x-ray and ultrasound, what can you learn from each? I'm always confused. Okay, so here's the thing. X-rays are good for a kind of a broad view of some body structure, whether it's going to be the abdomen, it's going to be the thorax, it's going to be a limb. And you got to remember, x-rays, the more dense an object, okay, that's going to show up brighter on the x-ray. So, for example, bone is going to be brighter than soft tissue. A metallic object, like the dog swallowed a coin, that's going to be more dense than a bone. And things that are fluid thing, you don't really see at all. The difference also is if you're looking for an abdomen, for example, that you're worried about fluid, or you take a picture, an x-ray, and it appears chest or abdomen, that you lose all your detail, then there may be fluid in there. Or what happens is what sometimes gives you good detail surrounding a structure is fat. So if there is no fat, if a dog is emaciated, you may not get the right detail you're looking for. Now, ultrasound, on the other hand, is more specific for a targeted area that you're looking at. You can't just look at the abdomen at all. You can do the abdomen, we do it often, but you start at one end and you methodically go down with the probe looking at everything. Now, for example, I just mentioned how fluid in an x-ray basically eliminates the detail that you're looking for. It covers everything up. So on an x-ray, fluid is your enemy, but ultrasound, fluid is your friend. So then you can actually see, it almost helps you delineate the solid structures within that fluid so you can get a better look. So, you know, for more detail, I can take an x-ray of an organ and I will see the outline of the organ, but you won't necessarily see the perfect detail. Now, you take an ultrasound of that same organ, for example, a kidney, all right, or bladder. When you look at a bladder on an x-ray, you really can't appreciate the wall thickness. But when you take an ultrasound of the bladder, you can really see the wall thickness. You can see things inside. You can see stones that are radiolucent, meaning they won't show up on x-ray, but you will be able to see them on an ultrasound. So they're not one instead of the other. You usually take them together, you know, or if you're looking for something specific that may be soft tissue of soft tissue origin or in a certain location, you'd be better off probably with an ultrasound. So I guess ultrasound gives you more detail, but it doesn't. For example, another one, you're looking at pregnancy. I know that's you know, right now a lot of people aren't getting up dogs pregnant, which is a good thing. But if you have a really legitimate breeding dog, and I want to count how many puppies, then you're better off with an x-ray. Especially once the skeletons and the skull are formed, then you can actually count to get the exact seat positions better. As an ultrasound, you can look at any one and say, yes, this is viable. The heart's beating, things are moving, but you may not be, it's more difficult to get a head count, literally a head count, when you're doing an ultrasound. So again, it's not one is better than the other. We often use them in conjunction with each other. Hope that answers your question. All right. No, to help them, it's frustrating for the family. Happens in the morning. Oh, Mama Sue, hold on. That means you ask me something and they go bath. What can your cat suddenly start to pee and poop in the house? Oh my gosh. I'll find bladder in it. Oh boy. I got to tell you, I often say this. I would rather handle the most difficult cat medical or surgical problem than I would a cat behavior problem. Because when you check everything else out and everything is perfect, x-rays are perfect, your ultrasound is perfect, you do the test, blood test, normal, urinalysis, normal, bladder looks great, and you still have a cat doing this, it is usually something behavioral. Something's changed in its environment, something you did, they're not happy with you about. Another animal was introduced into the house, there's a cat outside that's roaming around the house, and your cat is reacting to that. There's always, I shouldn't say always, I know, you should never say never, never say always, I got that. But often, very often, there is something that's changed in this cat's environment. And it could be the most subtle thing. It would blow your mind. It could be you bought a different litter. You moved the litter box a little bit. You let the litter go down too low. Food, diet, some sort of change in diet. A change in what time you come home from work. A change in where you feed and how often you feed and what you feed. I mean, it could drive you nuts. So a thorough history is that important when trying to determine what problem might be. And then you need to talk to the veterinary behaviorist, There are a number of veterinary behaviors. You can always reach me after the show. I will give you some names, especially some that now do everything remotely. With something, problems like this, since the physical exam was already done by your veterinarian and the bloods were already taken, they don't need that. It's one of those things where when you make an appointment with the veterinary behaviors, it's going to be at least an hour because the history and how this all happened and what has changed is so critical to getting the right answer. And then if it is something emotional, there are some medications that can be used to help at least get through this. So you want to reach out to me, I can give you some names. All right. But it, trust me, very difficult problem. Can you talk about cauliflower ear? I certainly can. I'll tell you what, Shannon, why don't we take a break? I have to take a break. And when we come back, we'll share this with everybody. And I'll go through some other questions that we can answer in the meantime. But the cauliflower ear is a really good one, so we'll talk about that. Don't go away.
Real people, real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem. But the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore on advertising. So I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye.
I've got a Labrador. He could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell she was very alert. She was going on 5 mile walk. She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com. That's carnivora.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets. Let's talk pets. On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back. So we're talking about supplements for pets. Okay, vitamins. You know, this is really interesting when it comes to supplements. I take supplements. I give supplements to my dogs and some supplement treats to my cats. But I'll tell you a perfect example. Show of hands, how many of you have given glucosamine supplements to your older dogs? I would imagine it would be a fair number. And then I was at the Western Vet Conference going to a talk, and this doctor basically says that glucosamine, there was a big thing in so many pet stores and different varieties and at different brands, and they see no benefit. I'm thinking to myself, really? First of all, how do you prove that? So when you do these studies, and I can almost guarantee, though I haven't looked into it myself, but I'm going to, and that is that the only way to really tell, because when they did a study on people, this is very interesting. They had two groups of people, double-blind study, neither group knew what they were taking. One was taking a real supplement with glucosamine chondroitin, and one was just taking placebo. And they were monitoring on X-ray. Now, first of all, as we just talked, X-ray has a limitations. If there's a hairy binder problem on a joint surface, or you're looking at a fluid, right, lubrication, you can't see that on X-ray. So what were they looking for? What were they expecting to find? Seeing arthritis and arthritis go away? No, that's not what polysulfonic glycosaminoglycans do, PSGHEs. So that wouldn't work. But that's what they say. No appreciable differences in the groups based on X-ray. This is what was interesting. They also, the six was a study done on humans. They had a questionnaire to fill out. And a statistically significant number of the patients that were on the real thing described them as being more comfortable, less pain. Well, could you ask your dog that? No, you can't. So my feeling is the PSGHEs, and I heard a talk from a sports doctor at University of Florida talking about the original PSGHE that was out there available called Adequan. Adequan injections, they were using horses intraarticularly in the joint, but found out there is benefit to dogs by giving it intramuscularly, which we do. And he is still a major advocate of doing these. There are changes to the joint capsule, to joint lubrication, and these animals feel better. Now, are you going to see a difference on X-ray? No, you won't. So I challenge that study. I don't know how they could make that diagnosis. How are you going to talk to the dog? You don't know how they're feeling. You can have the parent filling out a question and say, he seems more energetic. He's more likely to run up and down the stairs, whatever the criteria they're looking at. But I still think there's benefit. Now, skin, we talked about skin and very dry, flaky skin. But it's shown that there are these vitamin A deficiencies in some of these animals. So I would give them supplements, skin supplements, omega-3, omega-6 fatty acids. Now that, interestingly, they say that the glucosamine may not help the joints, but the essential fatty acids will. So I'm a big fan, and also antioxidants. I'm a big fan of antioxidants, so much so that I wrote a paper on antioxidants early in the game, knew nothing about it. They wanted me to comment on at this company. I said, well, I know nothing about these. So I hit the books and I researched antioxidants. And again, most of the stuff was done on people. I was so impressed with what the results were and how these patients felt. I started taking antioxidants, and I've been taking antioxidants now for about 25 years. So I look at it this way. We don't always know what the benefit may be, but they won't hurt. So my feeling is, if there's no downside, and there may be even a little upside, and it can help with how you feel, it can help with your aging, it can help with your skin, why not? I mean, look, I think a lot of this is genetics. We've talked about this. I look at some of my colleagues in the 70s, and I'm going, really? We're the same age? But you know, that's what it is. Can I blame it on the fact that I've taken these things for years? I can't, but I'm not going to stop. That much I'll tell you. All right, next up. I'm waving, Mountain Sioux. We just stopped two dogs months ago. Well, so again, that could be an issue. So you have two new dogs in the house, and this poor cat was saying, time out. This is my house. What are you doing? You can't do that. You can't bring two new animals into this house without asking me. So what happens is they say, okay, mom, I'm going to show you. So it is very possible that is the problem. And again, changing the litter, not often, right? Yeah, absolutely. All right. Susanna Summers, I see. Therapet MD. Is that a supplement? I don't know what's in it, but it sounds good. Skin cardamine is available. It works so well. Yes, I know the skin cardamine is great, and we are in the process of trying to make more. Okay. Heard that dogs lose taurine after the age of 5, which contribute to heart health. Well, it's interesting that we know that is very possible. If you could show me a study, I would love to see it. We know the cats can't make their own taurine. It's a sulfur amino acid, and it's made from cysteine and methionine. And dogs, also sulfur amino acids, and dogs can make their own taurine by cysteine and methionine. Cats, however, can't. So that's why in cats, we need to supplement their diets with taurine, and that's why cats have to have all meat diets. Not they can't have other things with it, but you can't make a cat, right, a vegan. You can't make a cat a vegetarian. They must have protein, meat protein, whether it's coming from meat, coming from fish. They need that for the taurine. So keep that in mind. Don't ever think about making your cat a vegetarian or a vegan. All right. Good morning. Yesterday, I was brushing and combing Lulu and suddenly saw her belly was bright red. That's a girl. She is pink. Then I saw that her mouth was also very red inside. I had not tested belly with it. Okay. So when you have something that is an acute onset and also something is seen as more ventral, now I'm thinking of what we call a contact irritant, something that she lied down on, something that she rubbed up against and caused that severe reaction for a number of reasons. Number one, we're not in allergy season right now. We don't have a lot of the pollens floating around the air. Number two, when that happens, if it is allergy, it's not something that happens overnight. It will get progressively worse. It'll start scratching. Much of the redness comes from the scratching, not from the actual irritation or the inflammation. So if you have an animal that suddenly shows up with any kind of lesion, change, whatever, you have to think, okay, what touched this? What did he lie or she lie down on? And so I would think about that as well. So for that, you can do a number of things. This is where an antihistamine may come in handy. So you can use something like a Benadryl, 25 milligrams. It's a milligram per pound of body weight. And you can do that. You can also cold compress, cool the area down. You can also get a spray that might have a little bit of corticosteroid. One that I like is it's over the counter and it's Bactine. And Bactine now has a bacteria. Bactine has been around for a zillion years. It's a Bactine with some lidocaine in it. So it kind of numbs the area a little bit and it makes them more comfortable. So that's something I would try. Counter with a brush. Yeah, she was absolutely red all over. I stopped the brushing. She was acting perfectly normal, high energy. Everyone knows it. So, I mean, again, it could be, I wonder maybe just the brushing could have done that. I guess it's possible. But, she gave an extra, maybe had a reaction to the next. I love NexGard. But again, you can't ever say never. So would it be normal, usual for a dog to have a reaction like that to any of the isoxazolines? The answer is no. But is it possible? Of course it's possible. So that might be also what's going on. On Sabasi, hello. Turn hand, is she clear? Ah, good. And the fact, perfect. Temoral has an antihistamine in it. And if it's Temoral P, also has a little bit of prednisone in it. Love Temoral P. It's so underused now because it's like so old fashioned. That's going back 40 plus years when I started practicing. But no, Temoral P is a good, and the fact that it works kind of tells, it supports my theory. Okay. And I'm waving. A lot of Alicia, hey, how you doing? Yes, do a cold bath too. All right. Good morning, Dawson Puppies. When is a good age to spay and neuter? 4 months and six. Okay. Here's, my feeling. There's a lot of change going on in this world as far as when is best to spay and neuter. For large breeds, for sure, I want them to have a heat. And I would say even for the smaller breeds. Now, is it okay to spay at 6 months before their first heat? Only if all their adult teeth are in. You do not want, because small breed dogs are the ones that have retained baby teeth. What you don't want to do is knock them out twice. So I would never recommend spaying. Now, again, let's not get into the thing with early spaying programs from shelters. I get that. We have to separate that. I'm talking about a dog that lives in someone's home, has already been adopted. You're the pet parent. I want to make sure that if I'm going to knock a dog out for early spay, it's at least after all the adult teeth are in. Why? Because if this same dog, after the spay, then you find out has a retained deciduous tooth, meaning a tooth that didn't fall out on its own when the adult tooth erupted. It's supposed to push that baby out of the way, but doesn't. Then what do you got to do? You got to knock the dog out again for a second surgery to pull the baby teeth. How stupid is that? So no, at least the earliest you can do is when all the adult teeth are in, then it's okay. Now, what happens long-term? The answer is we don't know. There are a lot of theories out there. And it used to be, and I still agree, the most effect of spaying having on eliminating mammary cancer as an adult is if you spay them prior to their first heat. They say it's about a 98% reduction. Now, if you let them have one heat, just one, and you spay them after the first heat, that you still have about a 88 to 90% reduction. It's pretty darn good. But you also get the potential benefits of not having a dog who has incontinence issues later on, and so also some behavior issues. So there is an advantage. There may be a big advantage to waiting, letting them have one heat and one heat only. Why? Because if this dog has a second heat or is bred after the first heat, on the first heat, there is zero risk reduction from mammary cancer. So that way, I don't want a second heat, even for the big dogs. Now, also understand one thing. One of my colleagues is a specialist in reproductive behavior. And many times we used to say when a dog is already, a large breed dog is already 10, 11 months of age and has had a heat, we say, it must have been a silent heat. She says, there's no such thing. She says, many of these very large breeds will have their first heat very late, even after a year. So you got to hang in there, let them have that first heat. And then 2 months later, whatever, remember, heats come every 7 months roughly. So about 2 months after that first heat, then you can have them fixed. So just that, my opinion. A 6 months or 2 hours, a cough has been going on for many months, drinks water, trigger cough. So again, what I would do for a cough like this, a dog like this, is the basics. First of all, chest x-ray. Look at the trachea. Tracheas in small breeds often will have either a redundant dorsal tracheal membrane or tracheal collapse. So these dogs have a cough. And of course, I don't know how you didn't see how old the dog is, but if the dog is older Chihuahua, then I'm worried about heart disease. So, and then what happens is as the heart enlarges inside the chest, it pushes up on the trachea and causing that narrowing and then the cause of the coughing. So it could be any of those things. So you have to start doing some diagnostics, rule out the heart disease. If it's a very young dog, it's unlikely to have. Then I would look at tracheal collapse. I'd look at a redundant dorsal tracheal membrane and you can get an answer. In the meanwhile, use a good cough suppressant. The Tussagon, the hydrocodone, is a great cough suppressant. And if there's any question about maybe if the dog goes to a daycare or goes to a park and has simple kennel cough, I also put them on antibiotic. I would say doxycycline or Clavamox seem to be the most often used. 16-year-old Griffon has started shaking when he's sitting still, sleeps an awful lot. I think maybe it's wrong with it. I mean, that could be, this could be neurologic. It could be muscle tremors. It could be intention tremors. 16-year-old dog, regardless of the breed, is pretty darn good. if everything else is good, of course they're going to sleep alive. They're 16 years old. But if when he's up, all right, if he's still looks forward to his meals, he still looks forward to cuddling with you, he's able to control his bowels and his urine inside the house, and there are certain things in life that get him excited, then keep him going. You know, we could do a whole segment on when is it time. And I would need more from about this case to throw my two cents in. But when you start looking at your own dog and you feel sorry for them, when there's nothing that gets them excited anymore, where they're literally sitting, lying in one position all day, where they can't get up and they're pooping and peeing when they're sleeping. If it was a grandma, you'd be considering full-time nursing care. When you can answer this question, is the dog living or just existing? And when they get to the point where they're not living anymore, when you're feeling sorry for it, when the quality of life sucks, then it's time to think about maybe it's time. Because it's the beautiful thing that we can do for them to avoid having them suffer or waste away or starve to death. So some of the criteria, obviously, it's so much easier for me as an outsider looking in than from you, who is, you know, this is your dog for many, 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 many years. Of course, you don't want to say goodbye. Even when you know you're doing the right thing, trust me, and I've been through this countless times with many pets, I usually have anywhere from 6 to 8 to 10 at a time. It's a challenge. It's never easy, and nor should it be. So anyway, if you have any questions about that, please feel free to reach out to me. Two is my son, 9-year-old Baltic, who couldn't walk or didn't want to eat or drink, since she was now eating, drinking, walking, but she's wobbly. All right, I would think then something neurologic. It could have been a disc, especially a cervical disc in the neck. It also could have been vestibular insult, where they can't get up. If you look at them, and that happens again, especially if it comes on suddenly, acutely, stare at their eyes. If the eyes are twitching back and forth really fast, then it could be vestibular insult, idiopathic vestibular disease. And they usually will come out of it, sometimes with a residual head tilt. But the fact that he's now walking, you know, could mean that she is walking, that it could be having had an insult. And now I let her ride. She's a veterinarian. Maybe get her on anti-inflammatory and see if that helps. All right, guys, I am so thrilled that I had so many great questions today. And I know that I was gone for many weeks. So distant, no longer excited about much, no longer eating much. Then you might be getting to that point. Just talk to your veterinarian. You can always reach out to me. And then there was one more. Hi, doctor. My female 10-year-old cat is losing hair both sides of her neck. Blood test is fine. Thyroid is fine. I'm giving omega-3s. Okay. So first of all, if it is working, you wouldn't know so fast anyway. It takes a long time for new hair to grow. And if it's both sides, and you have if it's truly a symmetrical alopecia, it could be endocrine related. If it's itchy, then it's more allergy related. And so usually endocrine alopecia is hair loss because of hormone imbalances are not itchy. And the skin itself looks totally normal. It's just they lose their hair. Now, if it's because of continued scratching, or maybe even scratching at an ear, then there may be something to look at skin, and maybe have some sort of an allergy treated, et cetera. And now, as I'm talking about this, and I'm so over time that I'm getting so many dirty looks from my producer, but I will tell you that I want to get back to that cauliflower ear question. So next week, if you can remember that question, I'll be here. We'll open with that question, because that can mean a lot of things. And I have my two cents, and and I could even predict probably how it happened in the first place, but I don't want to, without talking to you, I don't want to comment on it. But let me know, because we will come back and talk about it. And I'm just looking for the question. It was a long time ago. I feel so bad that I didn't get to it. Anyway, yeah, ask it again next week. And well, most dogs I know like the Trifexis, and pretty tasty. I would use some of the others. Use Simparica Trio, use Credelio Plus, and try those. They're also flea tick and heartworm. And maybe it's just the taste thing. Worst comes to worst, hide it in his favorite food, and he'll eat it. Okay, so yeah, I know I'm wasting your time here. Okay, I'll look for that question. I'll reach out to you, and we'll talk about the cauliflower ears. What question that you might answer me, and you can answer me on my Instagram or to Dr. Jeff at Dr. Jeff or Dr. Jeff at PetLifeRadio.com, did this dog ever have a hematoma? A hematoma is a blood blister in the ear flap. The ear flap gets really big, fills with blood, and then ultimately it starts tapering down to normal but, or, well, not normal. You lose the blood. The blood resorbs. That's very important to answer the question about cauliflower ears. So, anyway, we'll be back next week. It was great. We had a lot of visitors today. Really appreciate it. And we will see you back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel here on Pet Life Radio and my Instagram Live. And I am looking forward to it. See you then.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.